And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. How are you today, Bonnie?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Great. When we have a special guest here today. We'll visit with South Florida writer Carl Hiaasen. Of course, his 14 Florida-based novels have gained a national passion for his work. But today we focus on his longtime role as a Miami Herald columnist, and of course, even before that, as an investigative reporter. Carl Hiaasen has disdained the corruption, environmental exploitation, greed, rights violations, shady politics, crass tourists, commercialism of his home state. His latest collection of best columns is in the book Dance of the Reptiles, just recently released. And I'm proud to announce that Carl Hiaasen has come on our program to formally announce his intention to run for the Florida legislature.
Now that would be a nightmare for everybody.
Well, it's really a pleasure to have you. As I said, I feel
how about the county commission?
Talking.
We can go down to that level.
No, indeed, for years. Anyway, so your honesty is truly disarming. What always occurs to me is, do you ever fear the powers that be? Is there ever an element of fear in anything you write?
No. And usually by the time I get start in on them and start writing about them, they've got much more serious problems than just a newspaper columnist going after them. I mean, there would really, in the old days when we were doing investigations, especially during the high-flying cocaine years in Miami, when, you know, there was a lot of violence, mm-hmm. and you were writing about bad people, that would have been a time then to start worrying, I think. But it never materialized. I never had what I would call a serious threat.
You didn't?
No, I've had some, but...
You never had to go into hiding?
No. Not from anything I did in the newspaper world. No. It may have been other reasons I went into hiding, but not for that.
Well, good writing seems to run in your family. I understand your sister is a teacher at U School at Nova Southeastern.
Yes, she is.
And a friend of mine was telling me that she is a teacher for a couple of her students, and what a fabulous teacher she is.
So yeah, she's very strict too. I understand she's pretty tough. I'm glad I'm not in her class. I probably would. I'd probably fail.
Well, what were your parents writers?
No, my dad was an attorney, and my grandfather on that side of the family was also an attorney, and my mom was an English teacher, and then before she had. We had four kids right in a row, so that sort of, you know, that becomes more time-consuming than the teaching. But we always had books in the house. We were encouraged to read. All of us liked to read at a young age, and that's where writers come from. I don't know, and I know lots and lots of writers. I don't know one successful writer who wasn't a voracious reader mm-hmm. when they were kids. That's the bug that bites you, is that you read these great stories and novels or even nonfiction, and you say, "Gosh, I wish I could do that." Wouldn't that be a cool gig to be able to write something that people would want to read? And that's where it comes from, I think.
What was it like growing up, say, in the 50s, in Western Broward County around the plantation area?
Yeah.
And what were your main preoccupations and the things you did?
Well, you know, I was born in 53, so the boom had started, but it was just sort of accelerating. The growth, you know, the big building boom out there, and we grew up on the very edge of what would have been a wetland, you know, part of the Everglades, and it was getting developed very, very quickly. But I remember our house, the first house we lived in, there was not another house to be seen. I mean, really, it was just out with the snakes, basically. And that was the greatest childhood ever, was coming home from school and getting on your bike and you just ride out, and you're just in the middle of sort of the raw, wild Florida.
If your father was an attorney, why did you move out in the sticks?
Well, his office was in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and all the development was going on to the suburbs, which was what Plantation was at the time. And I guess they just, you know, we wanted to get into a bigger house, I guess, and that's what he did. And everybody was starting to move out there, and we were we were part of that. And even then, though, but to drive in from work where he was, it was just no, I mean, he could be in at work in 15 minutes. There was just nothing out there. So it was pretty amazing. It was a fantastic childhood. I mean, I spent almost all of it outdoors, you know, fishing and just roaming around and exploring, catching snakes and doing all that stuff that kids do. It's sort of a Huckleberry Finn childhood. So I reacted badly when the concrete started filling up all the places that I cared about, and you saw it change so rapidly, so incredibly rapidly. I remember coming home, first time I came home from college, and it just being blown away even by the few months I was gone, seeing what had happened. And you know, there's a, you get angry, you get totally pissed off, and at that you're also getting to an age where you understand the sort of the political engine involved in growth, which is there's no such thing as too much, there's no such thing as too many people, there's no such thing as too many buildings. It's all about stuffing as much humanity as you can on a piece of real estate and getting the most money out of it. And that was the mentality in Broward. That's what Broward County today is, you know. It looks like a parking lot most of the time. It's a disgrace what they've done up there. But, I mean, it's the same. That kind of attitude breeds corruption, and it exists all over the country. Mm-hmm. We just happen to live in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. Mm-hmm. So we see the extreme ends of that.
How long have they been trying, they've been attacking this urban development boundary? And I think they finally got success about a month ago.
Ever since I can remember, they've been trying to move in Metro Miami-Dade, yeah, the urban. But you know, it's all about big developers wanting to build even more.
And yet we have vacant strip malls
everywhere. Yeah, vacancies right here downtown. I mean, there's a lot of empty retail. There's a lot of it still, you know, all kinds of commercial. No, it's all about, it's the same disease, and nobody gets it. It's just about money. It's about, you get to the lobbyist gets to the commissioner, and you get the vote. It's the oldest, I mean, it's not always cash in a bag. It's not like a free Cadillac convertible. It's not like a trip to Vegas or an escort service. That, I mean, the real stupid ones, that's how they do business, the stupid politicians, and they get caught, a lot of them. But it's much more subtle than that. It's just, you're bundling campaign contributions, lobbyists. It's all about keeping you in office, keeping you, and there's a lot of ways to do it, but it's buying votes.
You've lived in Vero Beach for quite a spell now. You came to Miami, I guess, for the first time in a long time. What was it like? You've been with the Miami Herald in 1974, and you see what's happened downtown. And
I was here a few months ago on a book tour as well. I mean, I get down here because my grandkids are here, and one of my sons is here. But I mean, just the driving around the downtown area has changed so dramatically, and especially the, you know, driving by the old Herald building, which is, I guess, due for demolition, where I'd spent, you know, many, many years and really grew up in that newsroom on the fifth floor. So it's hard to see it. It's sad. Things change. I haven't been to the new place out in Doral. I don't think they're going to get me there with a gun to my head.
Why is that?
Because it's, first of all, newsrooms everywhere have changed so much. The heart and soul of what I was involved in when I was a reporter, a beat reporter, and working on the investigation team, that's all gone for me. So walking into any newsroom now for me is like walking into, you know, an Allstate insurance office. I mean,
remember the teletype machines?
Yeah,
there's
a whole different energy of level because of the technology, also because it's a much, much smaller staff.
Right.
And most people, once they invented email, internet, wireless, most people don't need to be in the newsroom to file their story or their column. And that's the big difference. In the old days, if you were Pete Hamill or Jimmy Breslin in New York City, you had to come back physically to the newsroom and work in all that chaos and pound. And that's the way it had been for me for years too. Now you can file from Mars. And you see, it's a whole different world. So I don't think it would do my soul any good to start hanging out there.
How do you ever get defeated? I mean, do you ever feel as though I'm just going to give up, you know, the fight?
No, never. I mean, the fight carries on into the fiction I do. The novels, which, while they're supposed to be funny, and they certainly, my job is to be funny in those pages, there's always the trick is also to be funny about something serious, right, something you care about, whether it's a place or an issue, whatever it is. When I do a novel with a whole novel about a crooked lobbyist one time called Sick Puppy, you put your heart and your soul into it. It's a funny novel, but the character I created was not very far from the reality of what some of those guys and gals do. So I was especially brutal with it. I had a great time, great psychotherapy. And I get rid of them in a fantastic way at the end, and in a very poetic, torturous way. And it's just good. You get away with so much more in fiction than you can get away with, you know, in real life. So it's a great therapy for me. But you're still writing about the same stuff, the stuff that means something to you. Honesty, right, integrity in government, you know, what you want this place to look like for your kids and your grandkids. Those are important things.
You started writing children's books, I guess, in 2002, was it?
I don't remember.
Something
probably,
like that.
Yeah.
What, was that to sort of get a balance? Why did you start writing for young adults?
I had no intention of doing that. An editor came to me and said, wouldn't you like some try write book for young people? And I said, are you out of your mind? haven't you read the books I write for grown-ups? Why would you want your children exposed to that? And they said, no, wait a minute. The messages you give, the environmentalism, the idealism in those books, and the humor especially is something that kids dig. Why don't you give it a try? And I had at that time my stepson and nieces and nephew were all about that 9, 10, 11 age where I would not let them anywhere near, you know, Striptease or Tourist Season, sure, or any of the grown-up books. But I thought it might be cool for me to write a book that the kids in my family could actually read without me corrupting them. So I wrote Hoot. And it was supposed to be a one-off, really, just for them. And the editor wanted to give it a try, and I had no idea it would take off the way it did. And it was the best move I ever made. Those books I do for kids, I get the greatest mail, and there's such a great energy coming from those. It gives you a little bit of hope for the planet, actually.
That's good to hear. We're speaking with columnist and author Carl Hiaasen, and we're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents. We'll be asking for your calls and emails when we come back. Stay with us. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and columnist and author.
Some of the stories during the breaks are better than that.
Carl Hiaasen will be appearing at the Coral Gables Congregational Church this evening at 7:30. Of course, that's right on DeSoto Boulevard across from the Biltmore Hotel. And you do need tickets. They're free, but you do need tickets.
Books and Books is sponsoring. And I have to say, I'm not going to be there in a clerical capacity. I don't want people to get the wrong idea when they go to a church. I was terrified the first time I went to that church because some of the stories I tell are a little bit, you know, like Miami itself, a little racy, and I was afraid the pulpit was going to explode with a bolt of lightning. But the pastor assured me that worse things had been said in the church by other guest speakers, so I relaxed a little bit.
So that is tonight, 7:30. If you'd like to join in this conversation, if you have a question or comment or for Carl Hiaasen, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org. I sometimes think, isn't there power in numbers? You know, there's so much general outrage with everything that goes on. So why is it that we're so powerless to change anything?
Well, I don't think we're powerless. I think the election of Barack Obama, which believe me, in my lifetime, I would have never imagined ever this country electing an African American president. It just shows you now that part of that was disenchantment with the Bush administration, Iraq, Afghanistan, the economy, everything was going into the crapper. So part of it was that, and part of it was a new face, a hunger for something new, somebody different, and of course there's always a fatigue that sets in after somebody's been around a while, and especially with second term presidency. So I'm not surprised to see the poll numbers where they are, but at the time that was national. But you see, again, that was a sort of a national thing, mm-hmm. And I do think it's easier to get people not mobilized, but galvanized on a national level, on a national issue, than it is locally sometimes. And that's what I worry about, what's happened with the Herald and all newspapers, the shrinkage of of the newsroom itself, you know, where we used to have warm bodies at every zoning board meeting or at every county commission or municipality meeting that we could possibly cover. We'd have somebody there. So there was always a watchdog in the sense that there was another pair of eyes writing about it so that people that live in these communities can find out what happened. Not everybody can go to every one of these meetings. And that's when the bad stuff gets done. That's when the crooked stuff gets done. And that's going to happen more and more as there are fewer reporters to be writing about.
So what's the answer?
Well, I don't know. The answer, I think, part of it is in community sort of news services, which you've seen pop up and you've seen funded by certain people where you have reporters that maybe don't work for a newspaper, mm-hmm. but that are out there. And I don't want to say necessarily bloggers, because anybody can blog. And I can go to a meeting and write something that's completely untrue about what happened there. I do think there needs to be a structure of journalism, editor, reporter, into the paper sort of thing. But I think there's going to be an uprising of that, because people are just going to get tired of the corruption that's going to... When you see a diminished press of any kind, you in any country in history, you see a tremendous rise in corruption and a tremendous rise in wrongdoing.
There's no chilling effect.
There's none whatsoever. And they're not afraid to do it anymore, because they know we don't have enough people to watch them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Carl Hiaasen, I won't ask you your least admired figure, but who is your most admired current Florida figure?
Gosh. You mean in politics?
Politics, literature.
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm going to have to think on that.
Listen,
I'll tell you what. I have a view that there are some really there are good people out there. You wouldn't necessarily know it from reading the columns in this collection, but there
are. We have many of them in this room frequently.
Yeah, and they're really trying to do the right thing, and they're doing hard work. And here's my problem. I don't like to ever go on record saying I think somebody's doing, this is a great guy.
Because then they might.
Because not only that, 2 months later, they could be in handcuffs. And I've had it happen before where I thought, this is a very promising person, And so you're very cautious about it. And it's a sad state of affairs, but you have to be, because, you know, this is the kind of place where somebody wearing a white hat today and looking great could really end up doing the perp walk tomorrow heading into the county jail. So you have to be careful. But I do know beyond the political level that there are so many great people at the grassroots level who want this place to be a great place, all of Florida. And I meet them all the time. I get letters from them all the time. They got kids. They care about quality. They care about clean air. They care about clean water. Not just saving the Everglades as a bumper sticker issue, but understanding that if we don't, everybody's in trouble. And starting with the economy of the state. So they're bright people, and they're out there. And I think, you know, I'll give you an example of something, because you hate to get painted with the same brush. You know, Jeb Bush and I didn't agree on hardly anything probably when he was governor. But I'll tell you what, he knew how to govern. He knew how to govern, which is more than you can say for the governor we have now. I mean, when there was a crisis, he was all through the hurricanes. He was busy. He was doing things. He killed a lot of terrible ideas that came out of the Republican legislature while he was there. I mean, he just killed them dead and didn't let them get to the point now where they're actually being discussed and debated, these insane ideas. Well, I don't have any specific. Some of them never even came to light, but just crazy, crazy mm-hmm. fringe stuff. And he knew better than to drag the public through that. The one thing that I was unforgivable was the Terry Schiavo case, where he turned into just another pandering to the right wing politician, and when inserting himself into a life or death decision that was purely private, personal matter, it was shameful. But having said that, for 8 years he ran the state, for better or for worse, and he knew how to run the state, just like Lawton did. Just, you know, like a lot, and there's something to be said for someone that knows what they're doing in that case. So again, we didn't agree on hardly anything, but I give him credit for knowing how to run government.
What do you think of the upcoming election?
Oh man, I wrote a little bit about it. It's gonna be good material for me.
Well, this week you wrote about medical marijuana. Yeah. And that Republicans are troubled. They want to keep that off the ballot because it would attract more liberal people to vote in medical marijuana.
Assuming they weren't too stoned to vote, yeah. Yeah, it's. But I think that's a mistake because I think the polls' support is so widespread for this that clearly there are many, many Republicans that are in favor of it too. So I don't think it's necessary.
Now you never inhaled, right?
Oh, I'm not going to say that. Of course I did. Are you kidding? I'm going to sit here and I'm going to sit here and lie to you. Find anyone in my generation, anybody who didn't. Find, as I said, you could if you would clear out, Tallahassee would be a ghost town if you ran everybody out of there that ever lit up a joint. Washington, D.C., ghost town. So let's stop playing games about this drug. It's just stupid at this point. Nobody believes that it's an automatic gateway to horrible. And the gateway is alcohol, cigarettes, much more. Go to any addiction center and talk to those people, see what they started with.
Just an email. How do I get tickets to attend the interview tonight at the church? I think you just have to contact Books and Books.
Yeah, call Books and Books, and I don't know who, but I mean,
In fact, I've got the answer there. This is Carol, Coral Gables. Hi.
Hi there. Yes, I work for Books and Books, and tickets are not required. If you have internet access, they ask that you go on and click on the Eventbrite icon on the website, just so that they can have an idea of how many people are expected.
Oh, okay. It said in Sunday's paper that they were required.
Unfortunately, mistakes get made, and a lot of people think that, but not so. And
okay.
we're telling people that call that the same thing. Tickets are not required, but that if you have internet access, to click on the Eventbrite icon.
Okay.
Boy, things get complicated.
Yeah, Eventbrite.
Anyway, that's tonight at 7:30 at Coral Gables Congregational Church.
Which, of course, is across from the Biltmore Hotel.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you,
Carol. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
What keeps you in Florida? You have family, obviously.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, I think it's critical, but as a novelist, that you write about a place you care about. And Florida's always been a character. Has been, you know, itself, not just a setting, but a character in the novels I write. And so I'm here because, you know, you stay because you love a place and you care about it, but also the material is so incredibly rich. It's like a treasure trove. It is just this wonderful freak show. And when you're sitting there scrounging around for ideas for a book, especially, all you got to do is thumb through the Herald or the Sun Sentinel or the Tampa Bay Times, and the little articles buried in the back are always the one you clip out and say, there is not just a character there, there's a whole novel in this perverse little thing.
What do you think attracts them to Florida? Do you think they're more here than other places?
Yeah, per capita.
Yeah.
I think the weirdness factor per capita is much more here. I think strange stuff happens all over. Dave Barry would tell you, he gets letters from all over the country of all kinds of weird little stuff going on. But the sheer volume and variety of depravity in Florida is really surpasses even Southern California, I would say, at this point. And so you're here because you're a greedy writer. You want the material. There's lots of writers have moved to Florida just for that reason and spend a lot of time down here now. And there's enough material to go around. But, you know, in my case, this is where my family, my dad was born here. I mean, this is just where I don't know. I'm sure I could write somewhere else, but I wouldn't have the sort of the same fire that it does when you're here and you're living in a place.
I remember a few years ago, I was coming down the turnpike south, went to one of the stations there, and they had a machine there at the Florida turnpike that you could write your own business cards and had them laminated. Joseph Cooper Roofing.
Yeah.
I'm heading to Dade County.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just it's that entrepreneurial spirit that Rick Scott likes so much. It's really it's good. Part of it is the laughter, that the reason you write humor and the reason you write satire I think in many cases a defense mechanism. It's to get you through. A lot of the mail I get suggests that people will like the fact that the books and the columns both make them feel that they're not in this alone, that they're not the only one who reads a story and has that thought in their head, like, nowhere else in America is this happening. Mm-hmm. That they're, you know, and that's what you try to do, is sort of touch a chord with people and say, yeah, it's funny, it's sick, it's scary sometimes, but we're all in it together.
Let's take a quick call, then we'll get back to Bonnie's question.
No,
I'm sure
I want you
she
to.
Has
no.
This is Rachel in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Hi, this is a great conversation. Thank you. I just have a question for your guest. What do you suggest to someone? You know, I've been here almost 13 years, and it just seems more and more aggravating, and I try to love Miami. But now, you know, with everything that's going on, we already have a problem with infrastructure, and I feel like things are such a mess. And now they're building and building, and more people are coming, and there really seems not to be any infrastructure. And you can see that if there's an accident when we got stuck in traffic, like last week, for literally 3 hours in a five-block radius. And it seems like a mess, and it seems like there's no one. Is anyone else paying attention to this? Do you notice that, too? Really, it's so, my friends and I get so frustrated, and we want to go back to New York. But then they say, well, the people that are coming down, a lot of them are from New York, and that's the problem. But, you know, what do you...
Well, here's the difference. New York actually works. And that's a fact. But I know exactly what you mean. Miami, the city of Miami itself, is one of the poorest municipalities in the United States, income per income. And it's also been traditionally one of the most mismanaged. The corruption is why it was well known, widespread. The joke used to be that Miami isn't a municipality, it's a continuing criminal enterprise. And that was the reference to the government there. They don't handle money. They issue bond issues that they have no idea half the time. And they're always on the verge of bankruptcy. So when you have a city that's being managed so badly, and I don't know how it compares today with, let's say, 5 years ago, but the infrastructure is the last thing that gets any attention. Mm-hmm. Growth is easy. You just approve every development that comes along. You tell everybody, bring, you know, put up the buildings. We'll take care of the rest. And then the rest of the residents get to sit in traffic for the rest of their lives.
Yep.
And that's wow. been the history of not just Miami, other places in Florida too. But you'd think they would learn here. You'd think there would be some level of sophistication and some leadership.
We still have floods when there's rain.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something that a first world country should even have?
Well, I always tell people, you know, who've moved to Florida and they wake up one day and their house is almost, they're surrounded by water. They're like a little house and they're living out west, like in Wellington or out in the West Broward or somewhere. And I'm saying, well, you built in the, you understand that you live in a swamp, right? And you understand that you're probably below sea level where you built. It's like New Orleans. When it rains, you're going to get wet. But no public officials, you know, are making the decision, you know, really, let's not put 5,000 homes in this area because they're going to be underwater.
Exactly.
I'm talking about South Beach. I'm not talking about...
Oh, I know. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
South Beach.
They always do the most road construction right at the start of the season.
Yeah,
yes.
South Beach. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yes.
I know South Beach. Yeah, I don't know. In short of bringing in, you know, hundreds of tons of fill and raising the elevation, you know, I don't know what the answer is for that.
I don't know either. They're doing Alton Road now. And
yeah, exactly.
And I mean, every place they've done on the beach, when it rains now, it gets more flooded than before they redid it. So I don't know what's
you're up against nature. Look at this. A great example is the beach replenishment business in the state of Florida.
They're doing it right now where
Of course, they have to. First of all, Miami Beach never looked like it does naturally. It wasn't. It was mangroves out there.
Yeah.
And it's a fabricated beach in the first place. But people complain when it gets eroded. And they have to keep. Now they're looking everywhere. This is true up and down the coast of this state where the erosion is so bad and people are panicking because they were allowed to build right on the edge of the water, mm-hmm. and the water's getting closer and closer. It's a losing battle, but they pay tons and tons of money for this sand. First it's sand, and then they'll go to a fill and a granular mixture so that when people are walking on the beach, it's nice. It's like walking on broken glass. Very nice experience. But they can't afford to pay for, like, the real sand from the Bahamas. It's Mother Nature, and we live in a place where, as we know from Hurricane Andrew, as we know from pythons and everything else that's going on, Mother Nature bites back here.
Where do the manatees stand right now?
They had a rough year. They had a lot of deaths, especially up in the Indian River Lagoon where there's some serious water quality issues, and they had a lot of them die up there, seagrass dying off and boats hitting them. And I mean, you still see a lot of them, but the population, I think, took a hit this year. You know, look what they're up against.
And let's take another caller. Of course, we have quite a board full. We're speaking with Carl Hyacin, of course. This is Doug in Kendall Lakes. Hi there.
Hi there, Carl. Thank you very much for both your columns and your many books. My question is if you could share with us something you did several years ago and you wrote about it in your column, and I don't ever know.
He did a lot of things a couple of years ago.
He did. And the one that I recall, and I always wanted to do it, you took a bike ride from Miami up to the Northwest. I think it was all the way up to Washington State, and you wrote about it. And if you could share some of your thoughts on that. And
I think maybe that was someone else.
Doug, I got to tell you, it wasn't me, man.
He doesn't have that kind of energy.
It might have been, I don't, and I can't, I'm trying to
was
picture
Dave Barry
on a bicycle for that long. And it's hard really to come to grips with that image as well. But I'm sorry, but it was not me. I couldn't be trusted on a trip like that. There would be trouble.
Carl, you're such a prolific novelist and have written so many nonfiction books, and one of them made into a very lucrative movie, I'm sure. What keeps you writing the weekly column?
Well, I mean, the first place I loved, you know, like I said, I grew up in the Miami Herald newsroom, and I think it's a privilege to have a column in a place where you live and you love, and writing for an audience that you care about. I mean, I think it's
easy. Keeps your skills honed?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's just once a week for the Sunday paper. But that day, you know, the days of preparation and the day I'm writing it, I'm back in this particular zone. The other thing is, you know, you finish a novel and you don't see it for 9-10 months, sometimes a year, but the production cycle, whenever they want to bring it out, the columns are still that great, where something is happening in the news, you write about it, and then it's in
there.
The paper, and it's a burst of adrenaline. But I get asked all the time, and there are days when I just say screw it. You know, why am I doing this? It's pulling my hair out. I can't get a sentence.
Do you have any quirks in your writing practices?
Well, yeah, I think I write always with headphones, shooter headphones, Ruger. I know, seriously, either Ruger or Smith & Wesson headphones on.
You mean the totally block sound?
Totally block sound, yes.
Why?
Well, it started years ago when I was living in the Keys, and there was some construction being done on part of my house, but they were right over my head, and I had quite a raucous and fun-loving crew of construction workers. And there was everything, all kinds of things hitting the roof on my head, including beer cans on occasion. And it was the one time it had been noisier than I grew up writing in a newsroom. You can write through anything, but this was just too much. So I'd started using some headphones like, you know, hunters use at a rifle range. And I got into the habit of doing that. Every day I'd sit down and I'd put those on. And so then it became something that I can't do without it. And I know in other writers, every writer has something peculiar. Some, for instance, have to write in longhand on a certain kind of legal pad purchased at a certain place. They're all weird. This is a strange profession. Nobody's normal in this profession. But that's one thing I do. I wear the Rugers.
Do you... Oh, I just drew a blank. Well, go ahead.
Now you know what my writing day is like.
We'll take a quick call then. We've got Esther in Miami. Thanks for your patience. Hi, you've been on a long time.
Hi, yes. I'm a big fan of Tropical Current. And my kids are big, big fans of Mr. Hyacin. They read Hoot for School, and they've read Lush and Scat and Chomp since. And when the Bad Monkey book came out, my son swore it was a kid's book.
No.
He wanted me to get, I know, and he wanted me to get it for him. So my question is, when is the next kid's book coming out? he's like huge, and you know, like 10-year-olds tend to be like,
oh God.
Obsessive. Yeah.
Yeah, so, the new kid's book, there'll be a new one coming out in September. And
oh,
but thank you for asking, because yeah, I it gave me a heart attack. I went to some book events where the Bad Monkey was the last novel out, and it was definitely for grown-ups, and there would be like a 9-year-old holding it from me, and I'd say, Mom, Dad, put the book back. No, don't even let him read the flap jacket. Okay.
Well, it's very enticing. The monkey looks very friendly. But yes, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Esther. Thanks for waiting so long.
Thank you. Leslie wants to know if you have any other book readings or signings in Florida. She can't make it tonight.
No, not right now. I don't. The column book just came out, and the only one I'm doing is Mitch's, you know, Books and Books, and Mitch Kaplan's place in Florida, and I'm starting to work on another one and another novel. So when I get in that grind. I just, you don't go out of the house, you don't do anything. So no, this is it for now. Maybe in September when the kids book comes out, I'll be on the road again for sure.
Okay.
Carl Hyacin's latest collection of columns is called Dance of the Reptiles. Again, he'll be appearing tonight in Coral Gables at the Coral Gables Congregational Church at 7:30, and you go to the website.
Just go to Books and Books or call them, and you click on. Well, if you go to the website, they said to click on. Oh, that's what? Eventbrite. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Eventbrite.
Thank you, Paul.
Speaking of which, are you very connected digitally, or?
Well, I don't. I get emails. My wife got me an iPhone a couple of years ago, and because I had refused to text, and she said she would rather often speak to me by text and on the phone. So I had to learn how to text, and then but I don't do Twitter or Instagram or that. There's a Facebook page that Random House maintains for me, that doesn't require, you know, you don't have to friend or defriend or unfriend.
Okay.
Or any of that, but. And they do a good job with it. I don't know how to get on the page, but everyone tells me it's pretty good.
It's easy to get on.
Yeah.
Frances says she's a big Henry Flagler fan and all of his vision that awoke an uninhabited tropical fair. What do you think of his legacy? And another question, your book Star Island, I thought of it immediately with the recent Justin Bieber debacle.
Yes. Yeah, I did too with Justin Bieber, the Star Island book. It came to, really. So many people come here to implode. I mean, so many celebrities come down here just to completely unravel. And you have to...
Anna Nicole.
Yeah. I mean, you just see it all the time. There's a lot of bad behavior. And it's a source of entertainment for the rest of us. Henry Flagler, of course, nobody, I think, of his generation, my grandfather included, because he came down here in 1922, and certainly as an attorney represented a lot of developers, but nobody envisioned at all what it would become eventually. You couldn't possibly with a crystal ball see that there would be 19 million people here within two and a half generations or three generations. It's an inconceivable amount of growth. So I can't say Henry Flagler was a visionary, and he certainly he had put his money where his mouth is, and he built this great railroad, and he saw it as a tropical resort more than as a hundreds of square miles of subdivisions. That wasn't his vision. But nobody who could have foreseen it and who could have stopped it is the question.
We're speaking with Carl Hyacin. His latest book is Dance of the Reptiles, Rampaging Tourists, Marauding Pythons, Crazed Celebrities, Larcenous Legislators, and Tar-Bald Beaches.
How can you complain about our legislators like that?
They are the biggest bunches. I swear to you. Know, it's just, and every year it gets worse. Every year it gets worse. I think you've seen the lowest of the low, and then something new happens.
What heresy.
Yeah, the esteemed legislature. Yeah. There's a reason they keep the Capitol so far from the rest of the population. The main population in the state of Florida is because nobody would put up with it. If it was in Tampa, nobody put up with it. If it was in Orlando, West Palm, Miami, nobody would put up with this. But they get away with it up there. And they make it as. And the other thing is, they make it almost impossible to fly to Tallahassee.
Oh yeah.
They route the flights through like Atlanta and Birmingham. So, and they. I'm convinced they do it on purpose.
Exactly.
They do not want to see the unwashed public up there. They want to be able to do their business and get out.
Well, Bonnie, we were heading to a break before.
We're
going to
take a short break. We'll get back to the legislators and Tallahassee when we come back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And, of course, acclaimed columnist and writer Carl Hyacin. We're talking about his book, Dance of the Reptiles. And what's the subtitle, Bonnie?
The subtitle is Rampaging Tourists, Marauding Pythons, Crazed Celebrities, Larcenous Legislators, and Tar-Bald Beaches. And it's a mouthful. Have you witnessed any improvement in anything?
Let me think about that. You know what? I see more turn signals being used now in Miami than I ever did in all my years at the Miami. I'm very encouraged by that. It was you always went on the assumption that nobody would use them, and now I saw one today in traffic on Brickell. I wanted to take an iPhone picture of it. The guy put his turn signal on before he cut me off.
I thought they didn't have them in cars that were down here.
Yeah. Well, where I live, they don't have accelerators, so I think that might be worse.
and It looks like a midget driving.
Yeah, well, yeah. There, it looks like nobody's. It looks like, you know, like it's like a 7 year old behind the wheel.
Let's take another call. Our number is 1-800-743-9576. We have a few more minutes left with Carl Hyacin. And I can tell this guy's driving. This is Nicholas and Davey. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Nicholas.
I want to say, Carl, I'm a huge fan. I think that, you know, your character development, as soon as I read the description and the behaviors, I automatically have 10 people in my mind who you must have met. And I swear he must that this is the character that if I could show you a picture, you go, oh yeah, that's who I wrote. I think it's funny that you talk about, you know, odd and sort of abnormal behavior in South Florida that is like geographically unique. And I often wonder if there is some sort of barometric or gravitational, you know, something geographic that could trigger. You know, like almost like a full moon sort of phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I expect it.
365 days a year, full moon. That's not a bad theory, actually. You know what? my theory on this, what I tell people, I think first of all, when you have a place that has grown so cataclysmically fast as this place, and you have this incredible collision of cultures because the people who come here have come from everywhere. They come from the Midwest, the Eastern Corridor. They've come from Central South America, Jamaica, the Caribbean, everywhere. You have all those people massing into South Florida, into Florida in general now. It's just the extreme behavior bubbles up because there is so much going on and everyone's trying to get by. And yet you also, when you have that kind of a mass migration, you bring a predatory element in. You bring bad people, the wolves that are on the edge of the herd, as it were, and they come stampeding in to make a killing here. So I think you just have all these factors. There's very few places that I know of that have grown as fast as this place and absorbed as much humanity and tried to cope with it. And I think you're going to have these extreme stories. People just, they're drawn here. The same people come here with this great idea, this great vision of Florida, this dream of where they want to raise their family. For every one of those, there's somebody coming down here trying to get rich as easily as possible at somebody else's expense.
When you get back to Miami-Dade, Carl, every few months or so, is there a special place you like to go or a special restaurant?
Well, I mean, I try to get out Tamiami Trail, and I mean to go out to the Everglades, and that's, I mean, that's corny, but I still get a kick.
We're not talking about the pit barbecue.
No, I'm just, I get a kick out of driving down, you know, whether it's Tamiami Trail or Alligator Alley west of Broward and seeing wild gators. I get a kick. I mean, I don't have any haunts, and I didn't really as a reporter, you know, the haunt was the newsroom. That's where you spent most of your time.
Where Johnny Raffa's Lobo Lounge.
Well, Johnny Raffa's, you had to bring that up. Yeah, and the 1800 Club and those places. There might have been
the local watering holes.
There might have been some time spent there.
Maybe.
Yeah, just a little. But no, you know, I love looking out at Biscayne Bay, and I try to fish once in a while. You know, I go out down in Stiltsville fishing and that kind of stuff. But most of the, you know, I'm not basically a city person. Doesn't matter where I am. I'd rather be outdoors now doing something else.
Do you have a favorite character, recurring character?
Well, I like, you know, I don't have a lot of recurring characters. The one that has come back most often is the fictitious ex-governor of Florida.
Skink,
yeah. And he's going to be in the new kids book. I decided I couldn't protect that generation anymore from him. And so he's cautiously being introduced into the kids book. But I like him, and I get a lot. The readers like him. I get so much mail about the guy, you know, that I haven't killed him off or anything because I like him too much. But he's getting older, and his services are more in demand than ever now with what's happening in Florida. So I do like him, and in Star Island was the last book I think he appeared in, and it was my dream always to get that, turn that guy loose on South Beach, and that was the only reason I wrote Star Island.
So do you have any plans so you have the column, you have the kids' books, you have the novels, anything else?
No.
Not screenwriting.
Not screenwriting. No plays. No plays, nothing like that. I'm just,
no,
you know,
poems.
I have a full plate, and I'm just trying to, you know, I have a teenage son, and I'm trying to spend more and more time, you know, with him. Those years go by very, very fast. And so, you know, I don't crank out a book a year, and I wish I had the discipline or, you know, the energy to do that. But I like to have a life on top of it, and I like to, you know, I like to go places with my family and do that kind of stuff. So it's a tricky balance, you know, but I'm always working on something. But I'm not going to be one of these people that drowns myself in my own manuscripts. Also, I think readers, you can burn out readers pretty quickly if you throw too much at them. You know, this column book was just Reptiles is just an accumulation of, I think, the last 10 or 11 years. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I have a great editor, Diane Stevenson, because I cannot go back and read all those columns. I want to, because I always see things I could have done better. I get very mad at myself rereading the old columns. So Diane does all that, and she'll pick out a bunch and say, these are good. And then we'll get it down to a smaller pile, and then I'll go through them and say yes or no. But I can't. You're very hard on yourself? Very hard on myself. I get very angry about.
So you want to edit them again?
I want to edit them again. I want to do a better job on them than I did the first time I see a sentence or an adjective or something. It makes me crazy. Why did I say it? So I can't. My energy, that's negative energy. So I turn it over to her. She reads the stuff fresh again and helps get through them. So thank God, because I couldn't do it.
Well, we want to thank acclaimed journalist and novelist and author Carl Hiaasen for being on Topical Currents today. He will be at the Coral Gables Congregational Church. That's across from the Biltmore Tonight Hotel. That's tonight at 7:30. Go to the Books and Books website and click on
something or other.
Eventbrite. And you don't need a ticket to go. Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thanks for having me, Bonnie. Thank you, too, Joe. It was great seeing you again.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer, the inimitable Paul Leary. We have audio archives and downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information, including author and book links, discussion, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like. Tomorrow's program is with Jackie Chido of Elder Services of Florida. Senior issues in Florida. And today's calendar, on this day in 1902, 112 years ago, the birth of Charles Lindbergh in Detroit. His May 1927 solo flight in the Spirit of St. Louis to Le Bourget Field made him a world hero. And on this day in 1913, 101 years ago, the birth of civil rights legend Rosa Parks in Tuskegee, Alabama. She was 42 in 1955 when she refused to give up her seat for a white bus rider in Montgomery. Rosa Parks died in October 25. Now we ponder the Stockholm Syndrome. Carl Hiaasen is of Norwegian descent. On this day in 1974, 40 years ago, newspaper heiress Patty Hearst is kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army. She was physically and sexually abused, but still served 2 years for bank robbery. Jimmy Carter commuted that prison sentence in one of his last presidential acts. Bill Clinton pardoned her. So we leave with a quote from Patty Hearst. I had been held in the closet for 2 months, and you know, abused in all manner of ways. I was very good at doing what I was told. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Next, it's Here and Now from NPR News.